So hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Shannon Norman is the King of the Worst. And it's about, well, it's a, the title comes from a track on Shannon Norman's great new comedy album, Human Raccoon. And, well, our guest for this episode is someone who knows something about human raccoons and the works of Shannon Norman. Actually, Shannon Norman. Hello and hi.
This is the sound of my voice. I've never worked with one of these microphones before. Is this where I'm at good?
It's fine. Yeah, it's. I put compression on this. It's all digital. Nothing's real. It's fine. All right. See, look, there's a little blue mark on the screen there. That's you. That's us. That's me.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
All right. Yeah, perfect. Hey, what's happening?
Hey, and besides, I give this thing away for free. Fuck people who, you know, don't like the sound quality. Whatever.
Yeah. Well.
Sometimes I did oil the chairs. That's important.
Yeah. That's the only. I was like, should I not move? Because this is.
You know what? Fuck them.
Fuck them?
Fuck them. All right.
Perfect. Good. Hey, everybody. Sorry. Fuck you.
Sorry. We love you. We do. Thanks. Thanks for listening. But yeah, so let's get into it. Human Raccoon. This great 14-track.
Thank you.
Live set. I was just saying earlier, I was at work today listening with headphones on. That would be important for anybody wanting to listen at work, I think, for anybody. Yes, headphones are important.
Yeah.
There's no sticker. There's no advisory
sticker. There's no sticker. There's no barcode, because those all cost extra.
So. Really?
Yeah, barcode costs extra.
Holy fuck.
I found that out when I had when I submitted everything to CD Baby. I had to buy a barcode from them. So, but whenever I got the albums pressed, they were like, where do you want your barcode? And I went, I don't have one. Well, how are you going to sell it in stores? When I let's not pretend this is going to be in stores.
But so this is also like a relic from the early 80s. Like, this is like, it'll be impossible for future archaeologists to date this.
Oh, yeah. Unless they unearth a thrift store where all of these will probably end up.
Oh.
This is a culmination of a lot of things. Like, I've always wanted to. When I was growing up and I was in punk bands, I always wanted to put out some DIY albums, you know? Mm. Like, at one point I was in a band called Straight to Video, and the gimmick I pushed for with that band was that the albums would just be, we would just film practices and release them on VHS. So, but it never happened. Like, Skip from the Speaking Canaries was in that band for a little bit, and it was fun. But ultimately, it was like, hey, this is just fun thing. We're not going to do anything with it. So, I think that was the last band I seriously played anything in. But yeah, I wanted to put something out on my own. And originally, I wanted to put out a record. I'm like, I'm going to do it. This is going to be awesome. I'm going to put out a comedy LP. And then I found out it was like over $2,000 to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I went, well, I'm going to do a comedy CD, because for a few minutes I was going to do a tape. You know, John Dick Winters put his album out on tape.
Yeah, I dubbed them downstairs in the dining room.
Oh, you dubbed them?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so like if you could burrow through the floor, you'd see where the dubbing happened.
Oh, that's insane. Because I asked him about when he did that, because I looked I used Easy Disc.
Mm.
And whenever the price for tapes and CDs were exactly the same.
Yeah.
But if I'd have known that, I probably would have done these on tape. Because it would be cool, and then you put a download card in there or something.
Yeah, but the CD's nice, too.
Yeah,
the
CD's...
If you ever want to do a tape, we'll talk.
Yeah, tape, CD, they're both, like, kind of obsolete. So it's just, So this album is dedicated to anyone who has a car that's at least 10 years old.
Yes. Well, you know, doing the cassette thing, it's always like, you, like, tell people, like, isn't it time you rescued some cool 80s car?
Mm-hmm.
That is like destined for the junkyard. You can just put all of your disposable income into this car, you know, keeping this 89 Miata going. And you're going to need something to listen to.
Exactly. A friend of mine who lives in New Orleans, Isaac Cozell, whenever he moved down there, he bought a secondhand car, or it had a tape deck in it, so it was like a third or fourth hand car.
Yeah.
And he put that out on Facebook. He was like, hey, does anybody have any tapes? And I've just hoard and hoard things, and I just sent him a box of random tapes that like roommates had left behind and things. I was like, okay, here's a couple of tapes that are funny, like here's a Jackal tape, and here's you
oh
know
my God,
like Jackal. The Humpty Dance single. And then I put in a handful, just because I was tired of looking at them in my tapes, a handful of Grateful Dead bootlegs that one roommate left behind before he moved to Montana. I'm like, here, Isaac, you can have 7 hours of the Grateful Dead noodling. And he was like, I love it, minus the Grateful Dead tapes. I loved every tape you sent.
You can tape over those, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the other thing. It sucks. You just start over.
I had a House of Pain tape, the album with Jump Around, and it was the first side that has like Jump Around and Shit Kickers, and those are the only two songs I can remember from that side. But I didn't care for the rest of the album, so I taped over the other side with half of King Diamond's Them.
Oh, wow.
So I had a mixtape for both of my teenage moods.
That's great. We had, when I went to college, there was this, I guess schizophrenic, but he had substance abuse issues. And, I mean, really severe PTSD from, like, Vietnam and stuff. The dude's name was Chico. And okay. He was just, I mean, he just only spoke in metaphors and, you know, very sweet human being, unless he had like any brown liquor, and then the shit would get weird.
Yeah.
But he had a tape recorder that he would walk around with, and he'd play music and then he'd record. And so you'd be like, it would be a Johnny Cash song, you know, especially he really liked, it was a Highway Patrolman with the talk about the Johnstown flood.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then suddenly he was like, and this is going out to the bears and mines, and blah, 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 what plantation do you serve? And like this like really weird abstract symbolic language that he would use.
Huh.
What I wouldn't kill for one of those tapes.
Man. I had
I do have one that I dubbed. That
oh,
somebody,
you do?
Yeah, that somebody had after he passed away. He still had it. And I was like, I need that because I need to digitize that.
You could leak that online as a lost No Means No album, and people will lose their fucking minds. They'll be like, holy shit, these guys are geniuses. There was a guy, when you started to describe that guy, there was a guy that lived around here, which, by the way, I don't want to give too much away, but you live in the Regent Square
area.
Yeah,
I live in Regent Square. So you live in Regent Square,
who,
yeah.
if they had a banner for this area town, it would be two middle-aged lesbians sending back a coffee would be the crest on Regent Square.
Yes.
But there was a guy that lived around here, and I used to, like, 100 years ago, I was a manager at the Squirrel Hill Exchange, and
shit.
There was
wow,
a guy
we've,
that
we've
used
been
to
crossing
come in.
Paths for years.
Though. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've definitely been sweating through our shirts at the same shows. I guarantee you.
That too, and one of my colleagues at Duquesne, Rebecca May. Do you
know? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Super Chicken.
Yeah.
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 Shit. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Office right across the hall from mine now.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pittsburgh's a big small town.
Oh, it is.
Anyways, Squirrel Hill Exchange manager. Sorry.
It's a big, small, incestuous town.
Yes.
And so there was a guy that used to come in all the time named James Richmond, who lived around here. He's now passed away, and he was kind of stuck in like the late 70s because he was kind of had some money. His family had some money, and he dressed like a New York doll still until the day he died. Because he was sometime in the late 70s, early 80s, he was in New York, and during a drug deal, someone hit him in the head with a red brick, and he got brain damage.
Wow.
And he was still, like, functioning. He was a functioning guy, but he talked odd with this way, and he would come into the exchange every day, buy albums. He was just obsessed with music. He had this voracious appetite for, what's the CBGB thing, gormophobes?
Mm.
He was one of the. He was an eater of music, and he would come in and he'd buy an album and ride the bus home, and then listen to it, dub a couple songs off of it onto tape, bring it back, and then he'd come in and he would complain about it, and he'd go like, you know, the song and the guitar, it's not in my home. And I went, oh, yeah, okay, James, yeah, I get it. And that was his way of saying, like, it's all right.
Yeah. But,
and he would randomly come in, and he would call my buddy Mike, who's a tall, skinny man, he'd call him friend, and then he'd call me big friend because I'm fat. So, and he would come in occasionally and bring us these mixtapes that he made, and they were always weird, and it was like, you know, track one was like Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, but then tracks 2, 3, and 4 are like some of the deepest, rarest them cuts I've ever heard off of bootlegs I've never even seen.
Wow.
And I used, you know, and like, and all the time I've spent hanging out in record stores, and I'm like, yeah, I know a lot about music. He would just turn around and be like, here's Steve Winwood playing, you know, like a fucking Guar song or something. Like the weirdest, the weirdest thing you'd never think that anyone would have. He just had these copy, and he'd make these weird mixtapes, and you could see where sometimes he would maybe get stoned or something while he was doing them, because it would be like, you know, single question mark of the Mysterians, blah 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 blah, and then just a big chunk of like Bob Dylan, like the Hollywood Bowl or something. It's like, okay, he nodded off here, and it's like 9 songs, and then and he gave me once these Beatles bootlegs that he had. That's the only time I've ever seen him in my life. And I put them onto CD for him because I had a CD burner at the time. And it's the stuff, I don't know, are you a big Beatles guy?
A little bit, yeah.
Have you ever heard the stuff where they're doing, where they do Get Back, and it's... but it's Get Packs. It's about Pakistani people.
No.
It's a racist Beatles song. It's Paul McCartney singing a racist Beatles song.
Holy shit.
And it's on there, and I was like, this isn't... What? This wasn't an anthology. This isn't on number ones.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like a... I want to say it was a 4-record set of just stuff, and it was some outtakes of Let It Be and thing, and then it was just... Yeah, the dude, I don't know where he would find this stuff, and he just was like a pool filter for it. He just dragged it all in, and then he'd put out these nuggets of just insane, these tapes. I wish I had some of them still. A couple people that worked at the exchange still have them. I should hit them up and try to get some dubs of those.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah.
Racist Beatles song.
Yeah, it's insane. And you know what? I haven't thought about it in a long time, but... I wish I would have made a copy of that for myself, just because it doesn't sound believable, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like in the record community of people going like, oh, the Beatles, you know, arguing about the Beatles, or let's just say Pink Floyd or something, where, you know, there got to be some smartass that would be like, yeah, well, at least Syd Barrett didn't write a fucking racist song at one point. Yeah, maybe they cut that out of the script of High Fidelity. I don't know.
Yeah. This is true. Which I think is actually, you know, we're on this, you know, to think about the record, which I listened 3 times a day. You know, your flavor for the absurd on the edge of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, yes, the trip to Target is fucked up. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there is that, like, unreality to how we live. You know, there's the environmental, there's the Methodist? Yeah, I think. Minister turned, or maybe it's I don't know, one of the Protestant ministers turned environmental activist Bill McKibben talks about how, like, you know, because he's a big, you know, sort of global warming is going to kill us all.
Yeah.
He's written books, but Deep Ecology is an amazing book, you know. And he says about how you think about we as Americans right now probably live on like 99% of all the human beings on the history of the planet. And it does all this weird shit to us. And we can't imagine another way of existing.
Yeah.
And yet it does all this really weird shit to us.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
I mean, I was talking about this today, where it was about the idea of, like, how people are so attached to their phones, right? And I wasn't on the side of being unplugged.
Yeah.
Because I love being plugged in now.
Fuck yeah.
And I think about it, I'm like, I remember, you know, I was born in 1981. I existed in a world with, I had dial-up internet.
Mm-hmm.
It took an hour to see my first boob on Google.
Yeah.
I had the internet, I had the internet, I'm such an early adopter in my family, the internet, that I was, the first time I went into an AOL chat room and said, how do you find this porn I've heard so much about on the internet? And someone said, go to Lycos and type in porn. So I went to Lycos.com.
Wow.
Which is a very old sentence.
Yes.
And typed porn in. And the first three hits were porno for pyros fan sites. That's how old I am.
Fuck.
That you had to go, like, to the fourth hit to hit, you know, Mr. Chew's Asian Beaver, which is a real porn website that may or may not still be in existence. So, and even before that, you know, a landline, like, you know, you were bragging about you having two landlines.
Fuck yeah.
In case the commissioner calls.
Yes.
But yeah, like having a landline and being able to go outside and be like, oh, I wonder what Bill's doing. He didn't answer his home phone. I guess I'll just run into him when I run into him. Like, I don't want to go back to that.
I don't want to go back to that. Though, last week, I went to campus and went to a restaurant on 5th, and I found a fucking payphone. I was in a bar that had a payphone eating lunch.
Wow.
And it blew my mind. Like, I was almost... And the sad thing is, and how fucked up now all of this transition is, because I'm actually older than you by a couple of years. My first thought was... Oh shit, I need to take a picture of this and put it on Instagram.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time. I think I was in Florida the last time I saw a payphone. But I mean, you know.
You can go to the Super Bowl.
What?
Upstairs in the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
On 5th, there is a payphone.
All right.
By the hockey table.
Okay.
The slide hockey table.
Well,
so you know.
Yeah.
So you know people of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
If you want to prank call someone on a payphone.
Be careful, it's an antique.
Be careful, it's an antique. Don't fuck it up for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Super Bowl, Fifth Avenue, uptown.
Yeah, the last time when I was in Florida, I was with the person I was dating at the time. They saw it and they went, I'm going to take a picture and put it on Instagram. And my thought... She's younger than me, but my first thought wasn't like, well, why would you do that? It's just a payphone. Who cares? My first thought was, yeah, that is weird, because I thought they were all gone. So, yeah, put that on social media. That's, like, I didn't see a problem with, so I agree, yeah. I agree with you. Let's take a picture. That's weird, right? Like,
yeah.
How did that survive? How is that, you know, the technology bomb went off. How did this shadow stay on the wall?
Yes.
This thing, how did this, it's unscathed. And I've seen where payphones have been.
Yes.
That's another thing that I see that more frequently. Like, excuse me. But they've taken the phone part out. I'm like, why don't you just cut the whole thing down?
Yeah.
Like, why do you need the little bubble around it? Sorry.
That's okay.
Like, why, yeah.
Well, maybe
why
they're saving it for scrappers.
The phone? Okay.
Yeah, maybe they're just saving. It's like, well, we'll let the midnight plumbers get this one. They can recycle it for us.
Sorry.
You sure? You cool?
Yeah. No, I'm just getting over that sickness thing.
I'm not editing that out.
No, keep it.
Yes,
keep
that's
it
why.
In.
I mean, somebody who's listening is, again, fuck the audience. Somebody's listening to this with earbuds. They're just going to, the cough is just, they're going to feel sick.
Yeah, I got
It'll
this,
be great.
Well, I had this crazy, I had the crazy thing I told you about.
Yeah.
Where I ate dinner, and then immediately after, like, I finished the last drink of water or whatever, and I got this fever, or the feeling, I'm like, I think I'm getting a fever. And I laid down for like 5 minutes, and then I had the chills. I started having a fever, and my throat started closing up. Like, my lymph nodes started swelling.
Ooh.
And then it was just, like, the worst sleepless night of fever dreams and sweating through the mattress. I hope it was sweat. And then a miserable day of, like, running on very little sleep. And then that kind of sleep that you get where when you're sick and you're like, oh, it's 5:30 p.m. I could go to bed right now and wake up at noon tomorrow. And I think I'll feel good. So I did that. And I felt good. But then I started it's weird. Like, I felt 100%. And then Saturday, I started losing my voice.
Mm.
And I could barely talk on Sunday.
Yeah.
And now I can't stop coughing. It's weird because it's nothing outside of the fever and the throat closing. It's like nothing has lined up together. Because, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Friday, no coughing at all. Now today, it's no coughing, but I feel fantastic. I don't know.
I think it's just your body trying to turn into dirt.
Yeah.
I think probably. That's why I explain it.
Probably. Well, somebody, another, I know, like three other comics in the city have this same thing. And they're like, yeah, it's just like some summer flu. And I went, well, okay, I guess. I mean, worst case scenario, I die. Who cares?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, I take a multivitamin. I ran out of multivitamins, so my mom gave me some of hers. So I take women's 50-plus multivitamins.
That's the good shit.
Yeah. Well, I had to Google, can men take women's multivitamins? And it was like, yeah, outside of, you know, make sure the iron levels are not. So I had to check. So I had to, like, read the side of my mother's vitamins and be like, oh, is this? Oh, no, only 44%. This is good. I can take this because too much iron will do something weird to my penis, apparently. I don't know.
Who knows? Geez.
But, yeah, so I take a multivitamin because I'm healthy.
Yes. Yes. Multivitamins all the way. Yeah. I've gotten to the point, since I'm a little bit older, I've gotten to the point where I had to buy one of those pill caddies.
Oh, you got a pill caddy.
I have a pill caddy because then, you know, it's like, because then I realize the absent-minded professor would look around at 10:30 in the morning for no good reason and go, did I?
Mm-hmm.
What if I didn't? What will happen if I didn't? Now, what if I take two because I did and I forgot? So now I just have a slot, I know.
Yeah, are you an AM, PM, or is it just a single row?
AM, PM.
AM, PM, wow.
Oh, yeah, it gets so much worse.
And
I'm only 40 years older than you.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's AM, PM.
Yeah.
Stock up now. If you see a good price on one in the drugstore, go get one.
I'll just get my parents when they die, because they're both in their 70s. My dad has two sets, because he's got, well, he's a Vietnam veteran, so he's like, oh, well, I take this handful of pills to counteract all the Agent Orange I bathed in. And then he's like, and then this one's for, you know, my foot hurts sometimes or whatever.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But, yeah, they have them set out in their bathroom on the vanity, and it's like my dad's 72 pills a day, and then my mom's up to, like, 40 because, she has that kind of arthritis that, because my parents, you know, they're from that generation, Vietnam, and they grew up in the 40s. They had dirt floors.
Yes.
So they have the kind of ailments that only, like, Polish immigrants from the 1800s have. Like, it stopped at my parents' generation, where you don't have, like, debilitating arthritis where your hands go inwards.
Yes.
All the time. Now, you know, now where I'm like, oh, man, my back hurts from boogie boarding at Lake Erie or whatever. You know. My generation looks at September 11th as a bummer.
Oh.
You know?
Well, you want to get really fucked up. So my freshmen this year were born, what, 98, 99?
Yeah.
So they have no memory of the world before 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
There was none of that kind of, like, lazy American exceptionalism, and you just, you know, Monica Lewinsky. Gone. None of it. We've always been fucking terrified in that war for as long as they have been aware human beings.
So you have baseball cards over there.
Yes.
So you remember a pre-9/11 world where Desert Storm was marketed to kids as something cool. We had Desert Storm fucking trading cards.
Well, I'll tell you what. I took Anthony Kapfer to Rogers, Ohio flea market on Friday.
Yeah.
Speaking of just going out into the world, I didn't even tell him where we were going. I just said, you know, want to go for an adventure in Trump country? I'll pick you up at 7:30 on Friday. And until we actually pulled into the parking lot, I didn't tell him where the fuck we were going.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he loved it. He had a great time.
Oh, yeah.
I turned down, because it was $25 was the sticker on the box, an unopened display box of Desert Storm cards.
Oh, man. Think of all the Schwarzkopf rookies.
I know. Schwarzkopf rookies. The only one of that whole set I think I have is I have the Dan Quayle, which is the only one you really need.
Yeah.
I have that in like one of those laminate like hard cases.
Cause... Are you gonna bring it out and put it next to you on the couch when you watch the reboot of Murphy Brown?
Yeah. I just might. But yeah, it wasn't $25, man. If that was $5, if that was even $10, pulling the trigger on that.
I'm a buyer up to 12 on that. But yeah, that's insane. I had a bunch of those Desert Storm cards because, you know, my dad's a retired military guy, so it was kind of like, hey, how about this? Because he was trying to push me into the Marines as I was growing up. But I also, at the same time, they weren't as popular. There were these cards called Dinosaur Attack. Do you remember those?
Yes.
Beautiful oil paintings of dinosaurs just like eating dogs in Los Angeles City.
Yes.
That's how old I am. I call it Los Angeles City, apparently. Jesus. And I was really into those. I'm like, oh, check this out. A Stegosaurus is stepping on a church. So those are cool cards.
But yeah, no, they're so yeah, we're old. They're not going to have any sense of the world before that paranoia or war being kind of fun or made for CNN event.
Yeah, there's a kid in, because I go to barber school. I'm getting my license, and I have there's a kid in my class. He's 19 years old, and he talks about things sometimes, you know, like from the perspective of being an adult. And he's like, oh, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm a grown man. And I'm like, fuck that, dude. I had things to do the day you were born. I know, like, I already knew how to jerk off and beat Castlevania 3 the day you were born. Like, I had a job. I had to feed a dog and a cat. Like, I don't care. You're not a grown-ass man. You're 19.
I bet he's never even used a payphone.
Yeah. You've never even used a payphone or glorified a war. Do you remember Camo Cooler?
Yes.
That nasty fruit punch in the camo cans. The Desert Storm. There's a great rip on YouTube of Taco Bell sponsored a parade.
Oh, I remember that, and the audio didn't work.
Yeah.
Yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's all up on YouTube.
Yes. Or, you know, speaking of camo food, I remember buying generic Spam that had a camo kind of cover of cover art, and it said Y2K ration on it.
No.
I remember going to a dollar store back when I really was young and thought life was too much and fucking hated myself. So I'm like, I'm going to buy this generic Spam.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fucking put it in my body. And there's no way I'm going to regret that 21 years later. I would do that. And there was I bought ones that said Y2K ration.
Y2K ration. That's awesome. What did you do on that New Year's Eve?
What did I do on that New Year's Eve? I stayed home. We were living in Danelle's grandmother's house, which I can only describe as like the Paper Street house from Fight Club.
Okay.
It was this amazing broken Gothic, like it was built to be their hunting lodge in this shitty suburban Philadelphia suburb thing. And it wasn't a hunting lodge. Like, the whole area, like, it wasn't farmland anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, the dining room table was placed there in 1920-something, and that table was still there, as was the rug underneath it. It was this incredibly Gothic thing.
Wow.
The roof was a little better, but it was a complete shithole, and it was the worst, lowest point in my life. I remember one of my professors said before, I was like, kid, you got something. Don't screw up your life. And I remember 6 months later when I was there. And the other thing that would happen is the sewage would back up.
Okay.
There was like an outside vent. And so I had to use this giant outdoor plunger
like to, because the neighbors would call, and no matter how I like positioned myself, I always like got sewage water splashed in the face when I did that. And I remember thinking, you know what? I know Dr. Labrie said don't fuck up your life, but I just immediately went out and did that.
Yeah,
that fucker jinxed me.
That's
what I did, and then we stayed home and watched the news, and I remember Channel 6 Philadelphia, the guy at like 12:05, they cut away, and he just goes to an ATM machine and does a fast cash 60 and shows the receipt and is like, see, it says 2,000, we're good.
That's fun. That's funny.
Yeah.
That's, okay, well, two things. One, when I was like 13 years old, my dad and five other guys own a hunting cabin up in Clarion. And they've got like, you know, 60 some acres of land, and it's an old German farmhouse, but it has an outhouse. And when I was 13, they built a new outhouse, and they tore the other one down. And the old outhouse was weird because it was three seats. It was something, because there used to be like 15 people that owned this cabin, and it was a weird, it was the scary, it looked like a haunted house, this outhouse. When I was a kid, it terrified me. Because not only because it had three seats and there's the possibility that three people took shits next to each other in
yes.
it. But you had to like step up to it. Like they built it, raised into this pit. It was terrifying. So the day they tore it down to build the new one, they're pulling it with a truck. And my older brother gets the bright idea for some reason to help. There's one wall that's not coming to help like push it to get it going. And we're like, why would you do that? And it hit and just shit shot up. And it looked like in a Three Stooges short when a truck backfires on someone.
Oh my God.
It just looked, and then he turned and was just, and he like had his eyes closed and was like, started walking towards my mom and I, like the mummy. And I never forget, my mom went, I don't know what the fuck you think I'm going to do. Get away from me. And we had to throw like buckets of water on him, and then
oh God.
And it was before we had quads and things up there, so I think he had to ride a mountain bike down to the stream to go take a bath.
Oh God.
Yeah. But so Y2K, I was 19 and I was at this party and everybody was drinking, you know, it was my friends who were in their first year of college. It was on Bates Street in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
The house is now boarded up.
Oh, that block where they wanted to build the condos.
Yeah, yeah, that weird triangular block.
Yes.
It's the very corner house.
Oh, shit.
We went, okay. We were there drinking, and me and my best friend Matt, we were childhood best friends, when it got to be like 11:50, we found each other. This place is full of people. There's like 25, 30 people drinking at this party. And he's like, hey man, I got this idea. I went, what? He goes, let's fuck with everybody at midnight. Because we knew nothing. We were like, nothing's going to happen. This is going to be fine. And as it gets closer, people are on the TV in the living room. And we snuck away. We go down to the basement. And we just are quiet. Quiet as possible. Because they like turn the music off and everything. They're like, oh, we're getting close. You know, they Dick Clark on. And then they count down. And they're like, 10, 9, etc. And they, 3, 2, 1. And we threw the main power in the house. And shut everything down. They went, happy, what? And everything turned off. And everybody's like, oh my God, oh God. And you hear that kind of like, oh. And then somebody, you hear two footsteps on the floorboards above you. And then someone looked out the window and went, well, the power's on out there. What? It happened. We flipped it back on and ran upstairs. And we're like, happy New Year, Y2K. Y2K, everybody. And ran out into the streets, and we thought it was going to be funny to run out and like take our shirts off and stuff because it's snowing and it's, you know. But other college students were like, hey, it's Y2K. And they took to the idea of having a small riot. So we thought we ran out of our funny little goof to people just like trying to flip cars and stuff. And there's this, I feel bad about this in hindsight, but no. I had no shirt on, and I have this bondage belt and a bullet belt as well, and like this green mohawk, and I run over, and this lady across the street has one of those light up Santa Clauses in her front yard, and she's looking, she's like, what is everyone doing out here? And I run over and I grab Santa's head and I rub it against my dick a couple times, and then like stick my tongue out at her and run away. And then I was, and then I kind of see the car start to go, and I went, "That's it. That's the end of my rioting. That's all I did. Yeah. I just got a little fake head from Santa. I'm going back inside to drink Boone's Farm or whatever shitty." Actually, I take that back. I know exactly what we were drinking. We were drinking Jacob's Best Ice.
Ooh.
Which I don't think they make anymore.
No, they don't. There was many good shitty beers of that era that they don't make anymore. So my actually 2000, year 2000 memory of that house at the corner of Bates and Boulevard of the Allies was my car died. Like the ignition module went.
Yeah.
And they actually drifted backwards into the hedge next to that house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it's like the car like... The ignition module went, and just like the car was just a brick on wheels. Like it just, there was nothing, no power, anything, no brakes.
Oh wow!
And I was making the turn because we were actually going to go to a Dynasty International Buffet in Cranberry. That was my that was our, let's just all you can eat shitty Chinese food in the suburbs. And it was Friday night. And,
I get it. And then
I end up rolling backwards almost into that house almost, but the head stopped me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, look, we could have crossed paths.
We could have crossed paths.
I don't remember like, that, so I probably wasn't there that night.
Yeah. Oh, nobody came out. Like it was like we got away, and then we got a tow truck and got
out of there,
and no one knew what had happened.
Yeah.
And the hedge recovered. It grew back, so it was
okay. I'm sure.
It's fine.
No one cares about it now. It's all boarded up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole block.
Yeah, that's weird to see. Like, that's one thing I will say is that as being, you know, yesterday was my birthday and turning 37, seeing a place like that, it's like, man, I spent so many fucking nights partying there and had all these great times, and now it's boarded up, and one of the guys that lived there is dead, and I was in Penn Hills, and I drove past the house I lost my virginity in, and it's abandoned, and I went, that makes sense. It's just...
The house I lost my virginity in is now a field.
It's field.
It's gone. It's gone. The house is not there anymore.
That's how good you are at fucking that the house house was razed.
Yes. There was like, fuck it. Yeah. I was actually the last person to live in that house.
Really?
Yeah. And I just helped a friend. I was thinking about this guy. I just helped a friend move because I'm stupid. And when you're really, really stupid, you drive to Columbus, Ohio in August on a Monday to help a friend move out of a third floor walk-up. Because,
oh God,
of course you do.
All three of those things on their own are stupid.
Yes.
Put them together.
You put them together, and she's in this great, she was in this beautiful mid-century apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable, like, just studio apartments. And she's probably the last person to ever live there. A developer has bought the building. Everybody had to get out. And, you know, we're taking this stuff out of this apartment, which is a perfectly fine, good apartment. And when we would visit her, like, we'd remember, oh, we'll go to that building, you know, hang out in her apartment or whatever. Yeah. And it's weird. Like, that's where she's the last human being to live in that unit.
Yeah, and they're going to tear it down and make some square Wendy's-looking piece of shit building, aren't they?
Yes.
Ugh, I hate that square architecture. That,
yeah.
That kind of, what is it? It's like faux... Retro modernism.
Yeah, that bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff, East Liberty, all of that.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It's happening in Columbus too.
Yeah.
Short North, where a lot of the cool college student things at OSU is becoming like that East Liberty Penn Avenue corridor.
Yeah, it's all
like
cubist.
Used Kids records had to leave. I did get the Used Kids though.
Well, that's good.
I bought the VHS grab bag box for $10.
Oh,
huge moving box full of VHS tapes.
You were telling me about that the other night. Yeah, you got, and the guy said, "What? Like you'll at least get $10 worth of VHS." There's
of enjoyment of entertainment. Yeah,
of
out
entertainment.
Of this.
That's
and there's way more. I now need a Betamax player.
Oh,
there was
get
Betamax in there. There were three Betamax tapes in there.
What was
Bolero, which is supposed
Bolero, okay, yeah,
which is supposedly one of the worst fucking movies ever made.
I don't know if you ever seen Zorro the Gay Blade.
No,
with George Hamilton. That's a bad movie.
That's a bad. Boom with Elizabeth Taylor is quite amazingly shitty.
I've never seen that.
Yeah,
I've seen Bang, which is an independent film with the soundtrack by Moonscott Records. That might be the worst movie I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw there was a documentary called Das Bus that was at Three Rivers Film Festival, and I convinced friends to go see it, and that was really terrible.
And what was worse is these people who were like kind of, they're nice people, but kind of very normies. Like they wouldn't go to like a film festival movie normally. Yeah, yeah. And then it was a truly horrifically bad film festival movie. And like the whole time it's like, it was supposed to be a documentary about bus culture and how, like, you know, what people think about. I like the idea of a social history and being critical and like what people's attitudes are about public transit and why crazy shit happens on the bus. Crazy shit does happen on the bus. And how romantic that is for some people or how terrifying that is for some people. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a cool documentary. Let's go see it. And it was... At one point, like, Tech N9ne was rapping in a bus because the thing was shot in Kansas City, and so there's just Tech N9ne on a bus just for no reason. Like, it's just there.
I mean, when you, the way you describe it, I'm like, that sounds pretty entertaining.
That scene was entertaining, but everything else was just all these non-sequiturs, and there was no through line. It was just a bunch of footage thrown together. And I remember, like, thinking, like, at the time, because I was still a grad student, I was like, man, if I had healthcare, I'd go to the emergency room right now. Like, I felt that physically ill, and the anxiety attack in that dark theater was so... I actually found the guy's email and wrote him and told him that.
Really?
He never wrote me back.
Oh, what a coward.
Yeah.
Did you see the East Bay Punk documentary?
Yes.
I saw that, and that, I think that was a very well put together documentary, and it was... But it was so well done, it emotionally manipulated me. I was like, why do I have so many feelings about a scene that I never gave a shit about?
Yeah, same here. Though that was, my problem with that documentary, though, it was I guess if you interview all these people for a documentary, they're going to be pissed if they don't make it. So you got to put all that shit in.
Yeah.
You got to put it all in. Everything.
Everything.
Everything's got to go in there.
Yeah, I guess so. Did you ever see The Source?
Yes.
Yeah, I like The Source. That's a really good documentary, even though it's got those terrible interstitials of, like, Johnny Depp as Jack Kerouac and Dennis Hopper as William Burroughs.
John Turturro as Ginsberg. Yeah,
oh, man.
And you know what? Actually, I watch it this time of year.
Oh, yeah?
Because
you have a copy of it?
I have it on DVD.
Okay.
You can watch it after this if you want. Because, seriously, I go through this thing where every year, it's the school starting. I actually print out all my syllabi today.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. So I have, you know, if I die, somebody could just walk into my office and teach my classes and it'd be fine now.
Yeah.
But I'm ready to go. But I also have this moment like, summer's over. How the fuck did I get myself into this?
Yeah.
Because I just had 4 months off. And doesn't that suck? I had 4 months off. Now I got to go to work again.
That took almost a year off. Yeah, I get it.
I mean, I did work. I did a lot of work. I got books and working on and developing new classes and stuff. I work from home, but like this whole, I could actually teach classes.
Yeah.
I watched that film as a like, okay, before I really knew anything, I knew the beats were cool.
Yeah.
I'm a more, I think, sophisticated reader now, and there's problems with, especially like Kerouac. Like one of my colleagues was saying, like, you know, there's a part in On the Road where, like, Jack is like, yeah, Neil hurt his hand slapping his girlfriend, and that really sucks that his hand hurts kind of shit. Like, there's that kind of stuff in there as part of that legacy. Ginsberg saying, well, the reason why there are no female beat poets because none of them are any good.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of shit. But I still watch it just as, like, Ginsberg said that.
Ginsberg said that?
Yeah, Ginsberg.
Ginsberg's the Jerry Lewis of the Beats.
Yes, apparently.
That sucks, because Ginsberg's the only one I still like.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only one I can still read.
Yes.
But I think I could watch... I would watch The Source again just to see... Who is it? Is it Gregory Corso sitting in a daybed just complaining the whole time?
Yes, he's so bitter. So here's a Gregory Corso story. The Ligonier Valley Writers, which is a group, and it's actually a lovely group, but it's people from Ligonier. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
sort of like old white people with money for that area who want to be arty or whatever. Yeah.
And they always have a writer's workshop. And one year they got Gregory Corso.
Oh my God, this is beautiful.
And Gregory Corso showed up not having bathed for about 2 months. And, you know, there's supposed to be this social thing, and there's hors d'oeuvres everywhere, and workshops, and dinners, and more workshops. And, like, nobody wanted to stand within 10 feet of him the whole fucking time.
Wow.
Yes.
That is awesome.
I did not witness that, but I know that that had occurred there.
And I'm sure he went back to wherever he lives, and I was like, those stupid fucking stuck-up pieces of shit, like... Yo, dude, it's Ligonier.
Yeah.
These people think Dave Barry's a good writer.
Yes. But I always watch that documentary because I'm like, that 16-year-old me is like, oh, yeah, okay. Let's ignite again what got me into this shit.
Yeah.
You know, this lifestyle of sin and misery.
What a good... Man, I can't believe Ginsberg said that. I would have assumed William Burroughs said that. Even though at the end... William Burroughs really mellowed out. Like, I think the last book of his I ever read was, like, his journals from, I guess, the last couple years of his life. And it's basically just a man keeping a diary of his cats.
Yes.
And I think on, like, the on the first page, it talks about this cat that he loves so much, and he talks so nice, and then 2 pages later, the cat died.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I think Ginsberg learned. I mean, I think Ginsberg said that in 1950-something.
Yeah.
You know, I think he learned. But you think, I mean, Kerouac went all crazy and right-wing at the end of his life.
Yeah, Kerouac really went, he really Dennis Millered.
Yes, he Dennis Millered.
Yeah, which...
Harder than Dennis Miller, I think.
Yeah, which we were talking about that before you hit record, about how it was like, remember when Dennis Miller was cool?
Yeah, I remember being inspired by it. I remember one of his HBO stand-up specials, watching it, and granted I was a teenager, I was a suburban teenager who, you know, all my culture was corporate and abstract and far away from me, and I didn't know people who, like, made stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I have a podcast as a scam, like, people make comedy albums, they'll be like, hey, you want to be on my podcast? And I'd be around, you know, somebody, because there was a time in my life when somebody made a comedy album, they must live on Mars or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching that stand-up comedy special and laughing at it so hard and, like, really, like, felt like my mind expanding. Like, these are ideas bigger than my own imagination right now, and it's so important. And then almost feeling a sense of loss and despair because I was like, man, I could never do anything that great.
Yeah.
I remember that. And now he's fucking insane.
Yeah, he's super insane. And I think the first... thing, the first glimpse of him going nuts was the football thing, because it was like, hey, I've done stand-up comedy, I was on SNL, I did this great television show for HBO that, though I went back on HBO Go before they took it all down after, I guess, some recent tweets, they took them down, but there was some things, some problematic stuff of blaming all of Bill Clinton's problems on Hillary in all his jokes, but nonetheless, there was also, he also did say, make some important points on the show that were funny as well, but yeah, it's 90s comedy, so it's pretty misogynistic.
Yeah.
And there's a good bit of punching down on both sides of the political spectrum from him.
Yeah.
But still, it was a formative thing in my comedy youth. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and then he went from there to go, like, you know what? I really love sports, which he has a sports podcast now. That's what he does, is a sports podcast.
Okay.
And
trying to, I guess, kind of hone in on that Jim Rome audience, too.
I guess, yeah, and he was went, like, you know what? I love sports, and people seem to like me. They're going to love me doing sports. And it's like... Yeah, people love sports, and there's a group of people over here on the right that love you, but the people that love you don't seem to really like sports, and people that only like sports and don't know who you are don't need to hear you going like, wow, Lynn Swann's a lot like John the Baptist at Bugsy Malone's birthday dinner, babe. You know,
like, yeah. You know, I remember watching those. That was when I still watched football, and I was like, I remember feeling embarrassed and sad. Like, oh, you're doing. Oh, it's like, you know, like an old lady falling while getting on the bus.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to do anything to help, but like.
Yeah,
but you know, I mean, I'm but and you walk. Can't laugh, but it's like, no, yeah, that's humanity is in suffering. You know,
I was like excited when I found out he was going to announce. I'm like, man, I'll watch this. You know, like the first Monday night game, and it was maybe the second quarter, and the other announcers were kind of like, you could feel them in the booth not making eye contact with him.
Oh man, yeah, yeah. I guess it's I don't know what happens. I have a colleague who's getting a little crazy, who has been a little crazy, who's getting, like, crazier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what happens to men when they reach a certain age and their life doesn't quite work out?
And there's no one around them to say no.
And there's no one around them to say no. You're
That's
right.
That's another thing. Because if you don't have, if you just surround yourself with people that like you and build up what you're doing and go, oh, all your output is wonderful. It's great. You're gonna end up. That's how we. You know. That's how we end up with a fourth wave of ska. You know. That's how you end up with people like Skrillex, because there aren't people
to say.
There's no counter voice to.
Yeah.
That, I used to say, years ago. I used to go. That's. If you're a band and there's no one around you to tell you that you're not good. That's how we ended up with the Dropkick Murphys. But then I hit my mid-30s, and I was like, I'm nostalgic for my youth.
Oh, God.
Break out the bagpipes. But now I have a... They did me a favor by putting out some albums where they're like, we're going to do traditional Irish songs and things. I went, oh, cool. I actually don't like this. I just had a moment of... I'm not a super nostalgic guy, but I just had a moment of weakness of like, oh, hi diddly dee, let's get in the pit. Oh, my knees hurt, you know. Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's
that happens.
Yeah.
People get fucked up, man. It's yeah. You know.
Yeah, I went from being turbo punk guy super into all of that, now I'm like, yeah, I just the only artist I really keep up with is Elvis Costello now. That's it. That's because I liked this band, the Hex Dispensers, but they broke up after three albums. Which, by the way, perfect. That yes. will make me not... I'll love your band more if you just do three albums, four singles, and then break up. And I don't have to worry anymore.
You don't have to worry. Yeah, they're not going to fuck it up.
I like the band Pup. Do you like Pup?
Love Pup.
Pup
Love
is amazing.
Pup. Have you seen Pup?
And I've seen him twice.
Ah, I was probably at those shows too.
And well, I saw him here, and I saw him down in Florida.
Okay, I saw them here in the basement of Kativo.
Yeah, I was at that.
Yeah,
but that's the show that I was, because I saw him at Fest in Florida, and it was just like, you know, it's a mix of people, and it's like you don't really notice it, but at Kativo I noticed it because there's the 21 and over section, and I was like, oh, this is. I think I might be. In the top five oldest people in the 21 and over section. This
yeah.
is. Yeah. And there's like 15-year-olds. Do you remember there were two people that were just making out the whole time right outside the 21 over section? I was like, man, you know what would be awesome is if in the middle of the circle pit they just started fucking. Because I've never seen two people make out so hard at a show before.
That's great.
Yeah, and all these teenagers with their Adventure Time hoodies and stuff are like, what is that?
Yeah, Pup is great.
Yeah, Pup's phenomenal. They're working on a third album, and then I hope they break up.
Yeah.
Because when they were like, oh, we're doing a second album, at first I was like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait for, oh, no, what if I hate it?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, I used to love to hate everything.
I'm with you.
You know, and
that's a true Gen Xer, I think. If you yeah. went through a period where the hatred of shitty things was actually more important
yeah,
and, to you than enjoying stuff.
And don't get me wrong, I can hate on some shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit out there that deserves to be hated.
Yeah, for no reason. But I'm like, at this point, anymore, I'm just like, what if people were just nice? What if Now, especially now that I have an album out, that I'm like, I hope people are nice to me.
Yeah. Well, I think they will be. It's good. It's a really good record. It's really funny. I mean, I found myself like going back to bits, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Again, I fucked up a syllabus because of it. You know, laughing so hard trying to like put books and dates and stuff together, and then, you know, revisiting, and the Johnny Cash piece.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that bit.
And the Halloween.
Yeah.
Because I feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly.
But there are, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And actually, we are 54. Now, as promised, we are 54 minutes into a podcast promoting a 47-minute CD.
Well, it started originally, I wanted to do an EP. I wanted to do just like a 20-minute EP and put it on my website for free. And I posited that to the rest of the Race to the Coffin guys in our group chat. And the rest of the Race to the Coffin are Alex DePula, Tim Ross, Jesse Irvin, and John Dick Winters, along with myself. And John said, well, do you want to headline these two shows and you can record there? Because I also said I wanted to record two shows, because I've seen people record albums over one night, and some of them are happy with it, and then others were like, I wish I had another night.
Yeah.
And I went, I'd rather do two. I don't know if we're going to get a lot of people with these. I don't think I'm a draw. But I ended up getting around 40 to 50 people each night, great. Which I was very grateful for. And, I got to do those two nights headlining, and I went, well, I can't just headline with 20 minutes, you know, do 20 minutes. I went, I'll just do, and then I went through, like, all the jokes I've written over the past 8 years, and minus the first 2.5 years I went through, because nobody should record the jokes they wrote in the first 2.5 years, because they're not good, and you're not Doug Stanhope, and you're not Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And you especially should not be trying to be like Chris Rock if you're a fat white man.
Yes.
So I went through some of those jokes, and I put things together, and then I, like, whittled that down, and, like, I even did a dry run of this, which is insane, because it was... To be 100% honest, this thing for my website, I was drunk watching a football game with my best friend, Handsome Mike, and I said, fuck it, I'm doing an album in the new year. And then it turns into I had to in front of a group of comics doing a dry run, like, do you think these jokes work together in this order? Like,
wow.
Oh, if only I... Think of how much further along in my career if I cared just even one more time like that in my life. But... Yeah, so I did it, and it was a little bit longer, and we cut some things out, but it's mainly from the first night. The only thing is, there's only a couple edits on it. Bent Alexander from Action Camp and the sound man at Club Cafe, he recorded it.
Oh!
Yeah, he did a wonderful job, and I'm very proud of it now.
You should be, yes.
And I never thought that I would do an album, but now that I've done this, because as soon as I did this, I went, well, if I'm going to sell it to people... All that material's gone.
Yeah.
I got to write new stuff. And now I'm already working on things. Like I just said to someone yesterday, I went, I think I'm going to call my next album Babyland.
Nice.
Because, one, I've always been fascinated with that store.
Yes.
And I love it that it's now, it's our, like, Winkies. Where people around here use buildings that are no longer there.
Yeah.
It's our generation's, like, oh, yeah, you just make a left at Babyland. You know where Babyland's at, right?
Yes.
So it's that, yeah, landmark of a closed-down business. For my parents, it's Winkies and the White Castle, the one White Castle Pittsburgh had at one point.
Man.
Yeah. No, we're both better off that there's no White Castle.
No, yeah, Pittsburgh. We're both better off.
Fuck, we lost out.
Yeah, no, that's probably adding years to our lives. Not having a fucking White Castle, yes. Yeah,
and we're both out of shape that the closest White Castle was 50 minutes from here. And we're like, 50-minute drive? I don't know. I'm going to have to stop to eat on the way.
I've driven to Wheeling for Tim Hortons.
Ugh, why? Tim Hortons?
Yeah, Timbits.
I didn't care for him that much. Yeah. I just had him when
Timbits I was... Timbits and a nice cap in the summer, you know.
We went to Tim Hortons, Alex DePula and Tim Ross and I on our way back from Indianapolis, or our way from Ann Arbor to Bloomington when we went on the road last month. And yeah, I was like, hey, that's fine, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't impressed.
It's a novelty. Canadian food.
Yeah. All right. I get it.
It's also part of our, if we go to Rogers, there's one in East Calcutta or East Palestine that is like the last clean bathroom before the flea market.
East Calcutta, East Palestine.
East Palestine.
The Gaza Strip.
Of Ohio, yes. Oh,
Rogers, Rogers Flea Market is the Gaza Strip of Ohio.
Yes.
See that? Dennis Miller's favorite go-to, the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, which is just abject human misery now. But
yeah.
Actually, I went to grad school with a guy who lived in the Gaza on the Gaza Strip.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because... And I'm so glad this happened, and I'm so appreciative in my life. But I have no idea why people from all over the world would go to Indiana, Pennsylvania to get PhDs and studying American literature. I have no fucking clue why anybody would think that's a good idea. But I'm that has enriched my life. But, like, what the fuck happened to that dude? That dude lived on lived in the Gaza Strip. He had to come here because the settlement laws, if his family came with him, they would lose the land. So his wife and kids had to fucking stay there for years.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And now, you know, with what has happened and the shrink, I hope he's well. I hope he's still with us. I hope, but I don't know.
And he anyway, came, but he I came know, here to go to a college that someone I graduated with got expelled from for rape.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, real fine institution.
Real fine. Institution, yeah.
Well, no, the institution's fine. The guy I went to high school with is a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had this happen to me too, though. I've had two era-defining friendships, male friendships.
Yeah.
And those people rape people.
Ugh, that's the worst.
And it's like, and I'm never talking to those people ever again. But there was like whole blocks of time in my life where because I was friends with this other person, all of these great things happened or I had all these experiences. And then as the friendships were dissolving because they were getting kind of weird and fucked up, they raped someone.
Yeah.
And what the fuck? You know, it's like... Anyway.
Sorry. I don't... That's a whole other conversation that, like, I don't understand it because I'm like... Because I look at it like an idiot. I'm like, well, I don't understand it because it's not hard to, like, meet not someone, rape someone and have sex. Like, you can... It's not... People like having sex... You can have sex. And I'm like, I don't understand why people... Oh, power. That's right. I get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one, it's like, you know, the phrase toxic masculinity is not... It did not come into my vocabulary until about 2015.
Yeah.
20 fucking years too late. Like, if I had it, like, even when I was still in high school, I was like, oh, see that coming. See that coming.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's a do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, if we all...
I have friends. And then...
If we all knew these things now, or that we know now... Then, instead of taking all of our social cues from fucking sitcom writers, from fucking Ian Maxtone Graham, and Sam Simon, we'd all be in a better place. No offense. You know what? Who cares?
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck Ian Maxtone Graham.
Yeah.
You deserve to be punched in the face by Norm Macdonald. Do you know Norm Macdonald punched him in the face?
No!
At SNL, because Norm Macdonald would smoke in the offices after they were like, yeah, you're not supposed to smoke. And Norm went, yeah, fuck you. It's my office. I'm going to smoke in here if I want to. So Ian Maxtone Graham poured a cup of water on his head one day. And Norm Macdonald got up and punched him. Wow. Right in the face.
Wow.
Yeah, I love Norm Macdonald.
Yes.
So we're going to do this bottom five.
All right, yes, let's do it. And now it's time for the bottom five. A series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, question one. It's the question everybody gets the first time they're on the podcast. If reincarnation is real and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would you be?
Oh, okay. I would want to be an infectious disease or an illness.
Yeah, like if you had to go single cell.
Okay, bacterial meningitis.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because it sounds real classy.
And I will say,
No one's ever said that.
Yeah.
66th episode of the podcast.
And no one's had bacterial meningitis?
No one has come back as bacterial meningitis.
It sounds so complicated.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I like it. All right. Question two. What is the strangest injury you have ever suffered?
Oh, my God. Okay. I broke a growth plate in my right foot when I was in high school. Because I was sitting, I had this overstuffed chair in my bedroom, and I was sitting there and I was watching Comedy Central. It was a marathon of Whose Line Is It Anyway, the British one.
Oh, okay.
I used to love that show. And my leg had fallen so asleep past pins and needles that I didn't notice because it was from the knee down. And my dad called me from downstairs, and I jumped out of the chair and fell, and my leg rolled under me, and I just heard a pop. And then I went to stand up, and I couldn't. And I had to crawl down the steps. And he was like, what are you doing? I went, I think I messed something up in my leg. And it didn't hurt. That's the thing. It just wouldn't support me.
Oh,
but then when the feeling came back, when the circulation went through, I looked down, and just the whole right side of my foot was black and blue. So, and I had crawled back upstairs.
Oh,
and my
shit.
It was just me and my dad at home. And I had to crawl back down, and I went, hey, we need to go to the hospital. And when we got there, I was mad that it was taking so long because there was a new Simpsons on that night. It was a Sunday.
Oh, man.
It happened at like 5 o'clock, and I'm like, can we just get this boot or cast or whatever? Because it's 7:30, and I heard they're going to Paris this tonight, you know? So that's it.
Simpsons. Anyway. You know, that's the thing that's happened to me. I've been in the classroom long enough that I can't use Simpsons references anymore.
Really?
My first, like, 2-3 years, when I had no idea what the fuck I was doing in the classroom and how to use metaphor and how to explain everything to everybody, anybody, I could just use Simpsons metaphors, Simpsons stories. And then after about 3 years, I actually had to maybe become a good college professor because that crutch was taken away from me. Youth, they don't get the Simpsons. All right, question three, which is more of a prompt. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood. Happy but unremarkable. So, can't be that you went to Disneyland, but more, hey, that one day it rained and we baked cookies.
Happy but unremarkable.
Yes.
Probably...
Still not going to edit it out.
I can't control it.
You want another liquid?
No, I'm okay for right now. Probably far more video store. The video store in Farmore.
Where you had far more buying power.
That's right. They had the first place I saw bootleg pop. Dr. Thunder.
Oh, and, shit, yes.
Yeah, they...
I used to buy that shit by the case.
Yeah, because it was like a dollar.
Yeah.
They, when they first introduced three movies for 99 cents a piece to rent.
Oh.
That was, in part of my childhood, that was a... That's super bland, but I remember being like, this is amazing. And that's how I saw Ghost of the Civil Dead for the first time. Because I just burned my way through their horror section.
Nice.
Down to the point where I think in the same day I rented the Ghost of the Civil Dead, Day of the Dead, and Dollman vs. Demonic Toys.
Wow.
Because I would just go and get movies I'd never seen until I seen them all in the horror section. And then I started just renting terrible action movies.
Yeah, the place, the little Superette near St. Francis, they started five movies for 5 days for $5.
Yep.
And that was, you made the trek up the hill when it would be a cold, shitty weekend, which was almost every weekend back in those days.
Yeah.
And you were just good. You had your little treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just, that's so good. Yes. Far more. All right, question four. Of the living villains of history, this is the Christopher Hitchens question. Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you most like to write?
Living villains.
Living evil motherfucker alive today that you would get some pleasure or some intellectual maybe experience would happen if you had to write their obit. This comes from his book, Christopher Hitchens' book, Mortality.
Okay.
But one of his first thoughts when he found out he had terminal cancer was, he said, I was really looking forward to reading Cardinal Ratzinger and Henry Kissinger's obituaries in the paper. And he said, wait a minute, I was looking forward to writing those. And, you know, he didn't get to. Or I would hope that he did. And it'll just, when it happens, it'll just come, oh, new, you know, it'll just be back. But
I think maybe, you know, there's so many villains.
Yeah. You got to pick one. I think it would have to be an interesting story. Maybe some sort of Faustian shit.
I'm going to say Ralph Nader.
Ooh.
Because that big push for the Green Party, I think really, it fucked up what was already going to be a terrible election.
Yeah.
And I think he did a lot of good. And I would write it with some reverence to all the good. He burned all of his goodwill and became a villain.
Yeah.
He lived long enough to see himself become the villain, a la Batman.
Yeah.
All those years of helping people were ruined by, what, an 8-month campaign?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ralph Nader.
Yeah, because that's like a Greek tragedy. Like, he definitely thought he was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And look where we are now.
Yeah, and it's...
I would rather have Corvairs and not...
Yeah, it's...
Corvairs. I'd rather have a Corvair than this, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'll roll a car over. It's okay.
Yeah, just, let, you know, keep making... Keep making those quads that are trikes that are just death traps. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's fine, but, you know, why do we need two Bushes
as
presidents?
Yeah. Know, so... All right, we're almost out of the way.
Okay.
We're almost out of the way. So this is the most complicated and weirdest question of all. Question 5. It's a scenario question.
All right.
If we're living in a dystopian future, and the only books to survive are ones bound in human skin, would you, and what book would you donate your skin for?
Ooh.
Like, you had to literally go to the tannery and be like, I want to become this.
Yeah, okay.
And then they would just, like, bash your head between two cinder blocks. But if you don't go to the tannery with that book, it probably doesn't survive into the future. Oh, and the Bible, Quran, and Shakespeare. Somebody did those. Those are cop-out answers.
Oh, well,
yeah, I'm not taking those off the table.
I wouldn't pick any of those.
Yeah.
I would say, what do I think is an important book?
That future humans need to read, bound in Shannon Norman skin.
Maybe,
And you got a lot of tattoos, so that would be an attractive cover.
Garfield rounds out his 6th book. No, I'm kidding. that was just the first Garfield book I owned as a kid.
Mm.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to say, if I'm going with, like, my favorite book that I think is important, I don't think Ask the Dust by John Fonte is that important, because it might... It might influence another person to become a shitty Bukowski. I'm going to go with John Irving's World According to Garp.
Ooh, quality.
That's my favorite book. I think I've read it. The only book I've read more than that is, read more times than that is The Shining.
Mm.
Because I used to use that as a palate cleanser as a kid. I'd read a book, and then I'd read The Shining. I'd read a book, and then I'd read The Shining. It was...
Really?
I was obsessed with The Shining as a kid. I was obsessed with the writing of Stephen King, especially The Shining.
Wow.
And I've read it, like, 15 times. And wow. I've read The World... I read The World According to Garp about every year or so. Maybe 2 years nowadays. But, yeah, World According to Garp.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Again, thank you for coming. Thank you
thank
for
you
agreeing
for
to do
on,
yes. And so, again, the new album is called Human Raccoon. How do people get a hold of the Human Raccoon? And they should get a hold of it. I've listened to it 3 times a day, people. Get this comedy CD and stick it in your 2000 Toyota Supra.
Your Corvair.
Yes.
If in another world.
In another world, yes.
Well, across all social media, I'm at Shambones. With a Z at the end.
Yes.
Or you can come to my website, shambones.com. That's
also spelled the same. I just submitted everything to CD Baby for my digital distribution, so it should be up on Spotify and iTunes, apparently on Pandora and other things within the next, they said, anywhere from 48 hours to 9 days.
Wow. So, and today is the
14th.
14th of August in the year 2018, so depending on when you're listening to it, it might already be there.
Yeah. Or, yeah, and you could also, go to my website, and you can buy it, physical copies from me at shows.
And there'll be a calendar on the website, and there is a release show on
August 24th.
2018.
Yeah, 2018 at the Brillo Box at 7 p.m. with co-headlining with Gab Bonesso.
Fantastic.
Where, because Gab's comedy album, Everyone's Dead, a comedy album, is just got re-released with some bonus tracks, and so we're gonna co-headline together.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. And of course there'll be links to all of this on our website. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes and descriptions and links to all of the stuff we just talked about, is gonnadiepodcast.com. I believe we're also on iTunes, Google Play Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Mixcloud, maybe Spotify. I don't know. I forgot to check before we recorded this. I submitted the paperwork.
Well, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History is on there, so you can go and not listen to that, because that is boring. Interesting, but boring.
Yes. Listen to us instead on any of those platforms. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks again, Shannon Norman, so much for thinking this crazy idea is a good idea to be on
this podcast. Oh, I had a great time. This was fantastic.
Yes. Later, meets.